focus on the levers that will actually produce the results you want in your business. And to build a profitable, satisfying freelance business, well, what you need to do is spend more time on marketing, period. What you need to do is just go out and start more conversations. And yeah. then you'll make money. And then you'll be like, wow, maybe this is legit.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hustle to Freedom podcast. As always, I'm trying to bring you guys awesome guests, and today is no different. Today's guest has been in the game for a bit, being the entrepreneur game, that is. We're going to talk about how he got into this, what he was doing before, and I really want to spend some time with him talking about kind of freelance world, the resources that he's creating for freelancers, the opportunity that there is out there with freelancing. I was just chatting with him before this we hitting record. We actually talked for like probably like 10 minutes before this about not freelancing, but you know, having an agency or a service-based business. And I always tell people, like, if you're looking to get into the game, like starting a service-based business is the easiest way to actually start making money. Like, you'll have people out there that sell you the dream of starting a course and making millions, or starting a website and making millions. But in my opinion, starting a service-based business is the fastest way to actually start making some money. That's what we both have, our service-based businesses. So I'm going to dive into all that with today's guest, Mr. Austin Church. Austin, welcome.
Ryan, thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
Likewise. So tell me, when you were a young lad, did you think you would be an entrepreneur?
I never wanted to be a businessman. I had always styled myself as a writer and a poet. Looking back now, I can see that I had side hustles from early elementary school. Some of them, I'm looking back, I'm like, I should have been smacked. I would rent out the best library books back to back to back. And then my classmates, if they wanted to read a certain book, had to come pay me to read the free book from the library. And so at Scales Elementary in Brentwood, Tennessee, that was the little racket I had going on. But I didn't connect the dots at the time. I went to school for English, thought that I was going to be a college English professor, went and got my master's in creative writing because I always loved to write. So I thought that was going to be my path. I'm going to be the college English professor. I'll get to wear tweed jackets with suede elbow patches. Maybe I'll smoke a pipe indoors. I don't know if that's still allowed, but I thought that was going to be my path. And then finished up my master's, was just done with academia. That's a whole other conversation, but needed to pay my bills, got a job at a marketing agency, got laid off early 2009 during the recession, and woke up on a Monday and I was a clueless, jobless poet and had to make something happen.
Nice. So you ended up starting a agency, a service-based business. Why, like, how'd you get down that path?
So I don't think I had a whole lot of other options, right? I'd only worked at this agency for 6 months. And so I knew a whole lot about like Shakespeare and Beowulf. I did not know anything really about marketing and business. I mean, even 6 months is like barely enough time to get your sea legs, right? Yeah. Had to look up what freelancing even meant at the time, because my old boss, the principal at the agency, he called me up and he said, hey, we actually can't finish the projects that you were working on as an employee. What is your freelance rate? And so having zero other options at the time, I threw out a number and it was a way to get paid and pay my bills. And so it wasn't like this very clear and well thought out strategy. It was, this is the path of least resistance right now. And it ended up being a really, really good path for me.
Yeah. So like I was saying, I think starting a service-based business is like the best opportunity to quickly start making some money, even as a side hustle, if you have a day job. Would you agree with that?
100%. I mean, because you already have the skills. And so if you're doing something in your 9 to 5, you can turn around and be like, okay, well, whatever I'm doing, it could be HR, it could be accounting. It doesn't even have to be one of the skill sets that we typically attribute to a creative agency, like writing, design, photography, video production. It might be something as simple as admin. There's a reason that virtual assistants are a thing. There are people out there who want to make extra money. It makes a whole lot of sense in terms of a low barrier for entry to leverage the skills that you've already got. And I actually think it makes a lot of sense. I'm not a big advocate of, hey, like, you have to go all in. I have 3 young kids at home. A lot of the freelancers I coach have kids too. And it doesn't make sense for a lot of people to take the full leap into the hustle until it has proven itself as a side hustle.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. And that's directly in line with what I'll always preach as well is, you know, you have a day job that's putting food on the table right now. Like, that still needs to remain a focus for you while you're doing this stuff. Because, I mean, the reality is most side hustles never really make any significant money for most people. Like, it's just pocket change for most people. And I would say if a lot of people keep going, it would eventually make money. But most people, they're pivoting to different things like I did, right? This didn't work. Let me try this. Let me try this. Let me try this. And it takes that sometimes to figure out what works. But just because that idea seems great doesn't mean it's actually going to be great. Mm. So taking that time to still focus on your day job, focus on what's putting food on the table now, and then slowly start building up that skill set and that income on the side. And I that's exactly what I did. I did that for quite some time. The business I'm in right now, we were building this business for 9 months before I was comfortable enough to like jump ship. And it was because like I was like, okay, revenue is consistent. That's what I was watching. I was like, I'm not quitting until for at least 3 months in a row, revenue is above this amount. Mm-hmm. Then I'll feel confident that, okay, like this isn't a fluke, right? This isn't right. Like we just got lucky for 2 months.
Yeah.
And then I was ready to jump.
Well, I think money anxiety is overrated. I think we glamorize entrepreneurship. And what doesn't get talked about a lot is how scary entrepreneurship can be. Right there, I once was interviewed by this guy named Will Schroeder, serial entrepreneur, very, very successful. And he said something that stuck out. He said, startups don't go out of business, founders do. Because the point is, you'd eventually find a problem worth solving, mm-hmm. you'd eventually find a business model for that problem, you'd eventually find a way to scale that business model. But you have to pay your own bills, and you often don't know how much time is going to have to pass between when you finally sort of cycle through enough problems to find the one that is important enough to solve or even profitable enough to solve. There are a lot of problems out there that make terrible businesses.
Yep.
Right? So I 100% agree with what you're saying. And when people are able to take the path that represents less anxiety around money, I don't think that makes the path any less legitimate. In fact, if you're doing your 9 to 5 thing and you're experimenting with a side hustle or even different side hustles, and you're socking away money in the bank so that you have more runway, I want to applaud you because that sounds like wisdom to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got this first opportunity after getting laid off, right? Pay me this much and I'll do it, right? So you got your first freelance gig. Probably didn't even know you were a freelancer at the time. What happened after that? Like, where did things go?
So I'll tell two big stories. Got a meeting with this guy named Andrew, and I'll forever be grateful to Andrew because he owned an agency. My friend, our mutual friend, Tammy, thought that he might be able to send some work my way. Go to his office. He thumbs through my portfolio. I'm like, hold my breath, right? Because again, I just have a chip on my shoulder because I'm so acutely aware of how little I know. I'm very aware of how green I am, right? Mm-hmm. He asks me what my rate is. And I felt very bold at the time in telling him that my freelance rate was $40 an hour. He was quiet for a moment or two, and I'm like shaking my boots, right? Because I think he's going to laugh me out of the room. He's going to be like, how much experience do you have? He said, can I give you some advice? Well, whenever anyone asks you that question, you can't be like, no, not open to advice. You have to say yes. And so I said yes, even though I was very nervous, thought he was going to be like, get out of here. What a ridiculous. Anyway, he said, if I were you, I would raise your rate effective immediately to $75 an hour because you're actually pretty good. And at $40 an hour, you will not be taken seriously in larger markets. You're just as good as the people, the freelancers, the agencies working in those markets. You've got the chops, but you won't even get the initial conversation if you're sending out the wrong signals. And that big lesson was your pricing is your branding. So I took his advice. I raised my rates. And I think almost from day one, I still had to have some misadventures for sure, but I attracted better clients because I was putting out the right signals about how confident I was in my abilities. Even when I wasn't confident, right? I had stronger positioning because I had higher prices. So that was the first big lesson kind of on my journey. Within 6 months, I had landed my first big marketing retainer, $2,900 a month. That was for a luxury resort in Turks and Caicos. How I got that gig is a convoluted story. But I took some advice from a friend and he said, hey, why don't you start learning about SEO? So I found this free SEO course from an Australian guy named Ed Dale. It was called the 30-Day Challenge. So in August of 2009, because I have so much time on my hands, I thought, well, I may as well acquire a new skill that maybe would make me more marketable. That ended up being a really good decision because SEO gave me a way to reframe my writing skills and charge a premium for them. So I locked down that new retainer. It's for 12 months. Totally transforms my life because I went from making nothing. And when I got laid off, I had $486 in my bank account and felt really stupid because I had no runway. So again, when I have freelance coaching clients who are like, I think I'm just going to go for it. I'm like, that's overrated. Just going for it is really overrated if you're really not sure if you can pay your rent.
Yep.
You know? So anyway, fast forward 6 months, I got that life-changing project, that life-changing monthly retainer. And that was when I thought, I can really do this. So within that first year, I ended up making 24% more as a freelancer than I would have made if I'd stayed on salary. The next year, I made 40% more than my first year. So when I started looking at the numbers, I realized I'm actually able to pay more and give myself bigger raises than I realistically would have gotten at the agency. But I didn't have a marketing background, didn't have a business background, and so had to learn some pretty painful lessons about how acquiring business skills, business acumen, giving myself permission to get really good at the business side of things, that was the real work. Right? A lot of inexperienced freelancers think, well, if I just become an incrementally better writer or incrementally better photographer, I'll be able to raise my rates. Not true. Someone with half your talent is making three times as much as you right now.
Exactly.
And it's because they're selling the sizzle, not the steak. And doesn't mean you have to be disingenuous in your messaging. Just means there are people out there who really get it and understand that your marketing and your pipeline and your process, your positioning, how you package up your services as valuable outcomes. All of this is like business stuff. It's not how to craft a better headline stuff.
Yep. So yeah, it's that package, it's that offer that you put together, right? That you present. That is, it's not like I write blog posts. It's right. It's like I'm going to write an SEO focused blog post that's going to drive at least 1,000 visitors. Like, you know what I mean? Something like that. It's totally in how you position what it is that you're selling. I couldn't agree more.
So when I, and again, it's not like I had really good teachers along the way. So everything that I teach is probably something I absorbed from, you know, my friend, Dr. Scott Christman, who has since passed away, or from Ed Dale, who taught the course, or from Andrew Gordon, who gave me that pricing as branding lesson. So I have a deep gratitude to all the people who helped me connect dots. Meanwhile, if you ever have a friend who is a little bit more successful as a freelancer, as a creative, as an entrepreneur, as a consultant, you begin to notice like patterns. And the pattern, and I think I already kind of said this, but the pattern I noticed was the freelancers who are consistently making six figures focus on six P's: positioning, packaging, pricing, pipeline, psychology, and process. And different people would have different names for those things. Not pipeline, it's marketing, or it's prospecting, or it's lead gen, whatever you want to call it. Everybody is like thinking about the scaffolding of the business. And yes, it's important to keep your skills sharp, but just sharpening the pencil is not going to make you a better writer.
Yeah. Which one of those do you think freelancers struggle with the most of those six?
I would say it's the first two, positioning. And there's a reason I put them in that order, because you start a virtuous cycle if you take your positioning. And my very simple definition of positioning is what clients really want plus what makes you special equals killer positioning. A lot of us, We only focus on the functional benefits of our skills: high quality web content, well edited podcast audio, right? And you did a really good job earlier of like, but there are benefits to that. The functional benefit would like, hey, because I know SEO and because I'm writing keyword focused blog posts, we're going to capture more organic traffic, right? Then there are emotional benefits of that. You're going to be confident in your blogging for the first time. You're going to be really proud to share the content that we create for you. As your ghostwriter, I'm going to position you as a thought leader and a go-to expert in your industry. It's going to be easier for you to sell. Easier to sell because people don't negotiate as much if you're a leading authority, blah, 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 right? And so if you really dial in your positioning, particularly if you're doing it for a specific target audience, well, I'm not just a blogger. I write authoritative blog content for attorneys, right? Or attorneys in the startup and IP law niche, right? If you get inside their minds and you really understand what makes them tick, you understand what they really want, you get clarity around what makes you special, and you marry those two. Well, when you actually talk to those people, or if they read, you know, the services page on your website, they're going to feel like you read their minds, right? Hey, Mr. Attorney, if you can bill out your time at $375 an hour, you have no business writing your own blog content. But if you are the thought leader, then you need an efficient and convenient way to get your thoughts, stories, you know, guiding principles down on paper. Guess what? I have a process that's going to blow your mind. I have a way to extract your thought leadership without creating a time suck for you. That way you can focus on billing, like maximizing your billable hours, growing your firm. And meanwhile, let's get your blog running on autopilot or whatever. Yeah, right.
And I think a big piece that people miss is like what they're actually selling. So are you selling blog posts? Or are you selling them like thought leadership and the ability to make more money in their business because they're not spending time on blogs?
That's it. Sell the valuable outcome. One of the examples I use quite a bit is the fact that no one ever shops for a hip replacement. You endure a potentially painful surgery and rehabilitation because there's a desired end state, which is, hey, I'm a yoga instructor and I'd love to be able to teach again pain-free. Hey, I have grandkids. I want to be able to take them on a hike and actually enjoy myself and trust my body. Too many freelancers are saying, I can give you a hip replacement. And your prospects are like, that sounds painful. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. When in fact, you could say, imagine what it's going to be like when you get to do all of the things you love, but without the pain. Imagine what it's going to be like to have a blog that other attorneys envy, and they wonder how you're able to put out such incredible, thought-provoking, valuable content and still run your firm and still grow your firm, right? It's like, how is that even possible? So focus on the desired outcomes, right? And that's where the packaging comes in. Yeah. The positioning is getting inside your clients' minds, understanding their hopes and their fears and their pain points and even how they would typically object to hiring someone like you. Once you have those insights, then you're kind of like, well, based on their pain points, what package would they even be interested in? What package of services makes the problem go away? People don't care about your services. They care about the disappearance of their own problems, mm-hmm. right? So with a productized service, I know you know this, but we can talk about it. We're talking about taking an open-ended, nebulous service like copywriting, turning it into a fixed price, fixed scope project with clear deliverables, clear benefits, and clear due dates on a somewhat predictable timeline. An outcome. You're making an offer. If you hire me, here are all the incredible functional benefits, emotional benefits. In fact, I'm so confident in my ability to deliver those, I'm going to make a bold promise, tell you a little bit about my process, and then here's the price. And that's such a better way to sell premium freelance services than to be like, hey, I can write blog posts for you. So if you want to stop competing based on price as a freelancer, dial in your positioning, package up your services as valuable outcomes, and then you can start moving into premium pricing and a really robust pipeline. But if you're just the commoditized option, it's going to be really, really hard to start making more money as a freelancer.
Yeah.
Until you work on your positioning and packaging.
100%. What would you say to that person that says, well, okay, you said that I can maybe repurpose some of the skills that I already have, but I don't think I have any skills. What would you say to that person?
I've never met a person without skills. Like my 3-year-old has skills, right? And you do not get to your 20s or 30s as a human being without skills. They may be hidden in plain view, right? So
I think a lot of it is a confidence thing as well.
Totally agree. 100%. Like even with those 6 P's I mentioned, psychology, I still find myself with limiting beliefs, mental traps, like thinking, oh, I don't know, I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee. Maybe a client in Manhattan would look at where I'm working out of and think, this guy is just some, you know, country bumpkin, right? And so I still have to constantly analyze my mindset and look for imposter syndrome, look for fear, look for insecurity. Everyone has it. Earlier this year, I listened to two different interviews, one of Tim Ferriss, Seth Godin, another one with Tim Ferriss and Brené Brown. And one common thread was like how all three of them in the two separate conversations were talking about how they have to proactively manage their imposter syndrome.
Yep.
Feeling like I'm not enough. Feeling like, well, what business do you have to be talking about blank if you still have these problems over here, right? So you're right.
I struggled with it big time and still do. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time the first client we got, he paid us $3,000. And I was like, holy shit, this person just gave us $3,000. Why did he do that? How are we going to do what we need or what we said we were going to do? Like it was tough.
Well, so I think a lot of insecurity and a lot of like, this is true of me. Like I got laid off. I had 6 months of experience. I mean, you could fill dump trucks with everything I didn't know, right? Like I just did not know so much. And yet I still got referrals. And yet people still hired me. And so it made me break it down and be like, okay, why would someone who's never even encountered my copywriting and marketing work put their reputation on the line in order to refer me to a friend or a local business owner? And here's what I came up with. We think that people hire us and buy from us exclusively because of our expertise. I think expertise matters. I think people who are really good at what they do often get better results. But I also think that most people make most purchasing decisions for emotional reasons.
100%.
And so if you walk in and you know that you don't have expertise, you're going to feel like you don't deserve the gig. If you walk in knowing that most people want to buy from people they like, and you decide, I'm going to ask great questions, I'm going to take a lot of notes, I'm going to be interested instead of trying to be interesting, I'm not going to talk too much because I'm blabbering on because I'm insecure, I'm going to ask good questions, and I'm going to try to uncover what problem are they really trying to solve? What outcome are they really after? I had so many people walk away and like, or not even walk away. At the end of a meeting, they'd say, wow, I can tell you really know your stuff. And I'm like, I said like 30 words this yeah. whole time. Like, wow, you're really great. People love to talk about their problems. They love to talk about themselves. You create space for them to talk about their businesses, their problems themselves. They feel great. They attribute that to you. And because people want to hire people they like, they really don't think to ask deep probing questions about your lack of expertise.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're insecure, you know, you're listening right now and you're like, oh, no, but like, I know hardly anything. I'm like, yes, expertise matters. But I tell you what, go in, be enthusiastic. Should I say it? Be likable.
That's so huge because like a good example that I can think of really recently, and this is something that we really like pride ourselves on, is like being very likable to our clients, where a lot of them think we're like friends, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and an example of how this works is we had a client. They just spent right at $8,000 with us. The very first call we get on, they didn't know
shit about us or any like or like on what we could actually like do for them. In that point, we hadn't did anything for them. They paid anything for them, and they already referred us a new client on the very first call. At end of the call, he's like, "Hey, can you hold on when everybody else drops off? I got something I want to tell you." And he's like, "We really like you guys. We know so and so wants this," and we ended up signing them as a client, literally just because they liked us.
So it causes cognitive dissonance to believe that people you like are incompetent. It's like our brains can't take it. They can't live in that tension. I don't know if you've ever had a friend that you found out was a terrible employee and you're like, wait,
I didn't see that
how
coming.
Could that be possible? Right. So the deal is if people like you, then they will assume at a subconscious level that you can actually get the job done. Mm-hmm. And I've had too many experiences, and I know it's just anecdotal evidence. I found a couple of research, a couple of studies at one point, and I wish I'd saved them, but it more or less says we trust people that we like until they give us a good reason to stop trusting them. So my advice to the freelancers I coach, the ones in my program, it's always listen. If you're very sensitive about your lack of experience or lack of expertise, I get it. I've been there. But show up, act like a pro. Ask great questions. Put the burden of carrying the conversation on them. They'll love the fact that you were such a good listener. They will add that as points in your favor in the professionalism department. And you can get projects that you really don't deserve simply because you were likable. And then guess what? Just never give them a reason to doubt your commitment, to doubt your work ethic, to doubt your expertise after the fact.
Yep. 100%. Could not agree more. I think these are great insights to somebody that would be interested in getting into this whole world of agencies or service-based businesses. What, like, as far as like the tactical stuff, because I know you work with people that are entering the freelance world and entering this whole service-based world and way to make money. What are, as far as like how the landscape is with social media and all these different platforms right now, what is the way to get started? Like, what is like, if somebody wants to get their foot in the door, like, are they posting on LinkedIn? Are they joining Upwork? Like, what's the path now in like the current landscape?
So there are bunches of different ways to get clients. And the number one way to start is make sure that all of your friends and family and the people you already know, including people in your professional network, know that you are available to hire. I bet 9 out of every 10 of the freelancers I've talked to, and I've talked to hundreds at this point, when I ask, does pretty much everyone in your network, the network you already have, does do all the people in the network you already have know that they can hire you, and that if they were to hire you, here are the handful of outcomes you can deliver.
Now, what would you say? So if I put myself in the position that I was in the position that a lot of listeners are in, they're still working 9-to-5 jobs and they don't want everybody to know what they're doing on the side. Like, it's kind of like hidden. Like, where would that person start at?
Most employers do not care. If you're freelancing, you can say, we're saving up for a trip. We need a little bit of extra money to buy a new car. Unless you like signed an agreement with your employer that says you are not able to freelance while you're, you know.
Which the company already had that. Like that's in our onboarding. Was it didn't say freelance, but it said that if you have another income producing job outside of this, then you have to notify the company about this engagement. So I was always secretive about it.
Well, and I would say you're going to have cognitive dissonance if you don't just follow the protocol there, right? And I have, again, if I think a lot of employers are going to be open-minded. A lot of HR departments are going to be open-minded. They're not like, they cannot reasonably expect for you to go out and become a true competitor, right? They don't want you disclosing any trade secrets. I get that. So like, always try to honor the contracts you've already signed as much as you're able, right? But the fact is, freelancing so often is a top of mind and awareness game, and people cannot care about what you're doing if they don't know about what you're doing.
Yeah. So how I overcame this was I never really told anybody at work, and I removed my connection with everyone that I was associated with on LinkedIn at work. And just totally disconnected on social media from anybody that had anything to do with my job.
And I think that's smart, right? It's like, if it makes you uncomfortable to think that somebody at your 9-to-5 might misinterpret what you're doing, well then, yeah, by all means, minimize the likelihood that they're going to find out. But meanwhile, when you think about, well, how do I spread the word? How do I get clients? You got to remember, a statistically relevant number of activities. Most freelancers don't pick up clients and projects where they might have because they give up too soon. So they make 20 posts on Instagram and then they're like, yeah, you just can't get freelance clients on Instagram. It's like, well, yeah, you can, but you probably need to be showing up daily for 6 months. Meanwhile, you need to be proactively building your audience. If you're going to do anything with content marketing, it's a two-sided strategy. Grow your audience. Well, actually, it's three-sided. Grow your audience. Do your best to increase engagement. And then produce content consistently, right? But going back to the earlier thing, whatever you choose to do, you know, back when local events were still happening, right? But whatever you choose to do, if it's going to local startup events, if it is showing up on LinkedIn, if it is Instagram, if it is, oh, I'm going to build my email list, or I'm going to network with other freelancers, or I'm going to network with agencies so that I can be a subcontractor, whatever it is, commit to 100 activities underneath that strategy. So I'm not just going to say, you know what, I'm going to start showing up on LinkedIn more often. I'm going to make a very clear plan, hold my own feet to the fire, and say, I'm going to show up on LinkedIn Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday every week for the next 6 months. Meanwhile, I'm going to use LinkedIn's Sales Navigator tool to pinpoint the type of people I'd like to work with. Like, oh, I love camping. I love outdoor brands. I'm going to go after outdoor brands. Well, use LinkedIn Sales Navigator tool to find the founders or marketing directors or CMOs or whoever is the decision maker at those companies, and methodically grow your audience. Marketing is about spreading the word, giving people a chance to care, and starting conversations. So you cannot reasonably expect to pick up freelance clients predictably if you're not starting conversations predictably. So committing to a set of regular activities is all about, it's not trying to get on the hamster wheel. It's like, I just have to make some commitments in order to reasonably expect to start conversations consistently, right?
Input is output.
Exactly. It's a numbers game. If only 10% of your audience will be ready to buy at any given time, look at your numbers. You may not have a big enough audience yet to have a consistent income with this. Yeah,
and I would say that, because I know we see this in our business, there's a direct correlation between the number of conversations that we're having, or in our case, calls, to the amount of money we make that month. When calls are up, revenue is up. When calls are down, revenue is down. When calls are up, revenue is up. And it's like, we track them. This is one of our metrics. And the lines are always trailing each other. always. So in this case, the amount of conversations that you're having, the amount of messages, the amount of times you're showing up, it's going to be directly correlated to the amount of clients that you get and thus money that you make.
So I had the opportunity to work with some incredible sales consultants very early after I started freelancing, within the first year. So just by virtue of helping them with their website, doing a lot of writing, I kind of got this crash course in a lot of their methodology. And they talked quite a bit about, like, you don't just track the number of dollars that came in. Those dollars are just a byproduct of the proposals that you sent.
Lag indicator.
Exactly. Those proposals are a byproduct of the number of appointments or calls that you set. Well, and those appointments are just a byproduct or of the number of leads or prospects that you have. And so a lot of times they're like, how do I get new projects? Well, that's actually four numbers away from where you need to put your focus right now. The focus should be, how do I find more leads? Now, there are a lot of leads hidden in plain view, right? You could be at a coffee shop and someone is sitting next to you and you overhear a conversation. They're like, I hate my website. Well, if you're a web designer, that is a lead and you need to go be awkward and say, hey, I'm really sorry. I was not eavesdropping. I just overheard one thing. I'd love to have a conversation with you about your website. I'll do a free audit and I'll let you know that if you were to redesign it, here are some things that you could do right away to make it better, right? So again, if you're new to the freelance game, it might feel a little bit strange to be thinking about your sales activities, but I would just encourage freelancers listening to put more emphasis on, how can I start more conversations rather
than, I think you should,
how do I get more money in the bank, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really strong principle there, lead indicators versus lag indicators, right? What are the things that are actually driving the outcome that you desire? If you're just starting out and you want clients, you have to figure out what are those actions that are taking place up front, downstream, that are producing that result that you want upstream.
That's right. And you'll still get referrals. You'll still have people who just seem to pop. It happened to me this week where on Sunday night, my attorney said, hey, we need some work. Can we get a proposal from you? We talked on Monday. I sent the proposal and he accepted it on Tuesday. I mean, really, really short sales cycle, right? It wasn't even 3 days. I love those. But you cannot build a business on outliers like that. You build a business by tracking your numbers, figuring out what works predictably, and then doubling down on that. A lot of what I do is content marketing because that has proven historically to be effective for starting new conversations for me. And then, you know, yeah, over time, you're like, okay, well, how do I move more leads into a phone call? There are tactics that you can employ, you can learn, you can master to say, well, let's hop on a call, right? Once you're on a call, there are, you know, active listening skills. There are consulting questions. There are ways that you can improve to increase the number of people who ask for a proposal. There are really crappy proposals and really good ones. So you can go really deep and learn how to put together an excellent proposal that just has a higher likelihood of getting a yes, right? All of those things are important, but I think that it's better to major in the majors at first. Focus on filling your pipeline with leads, even if your close rate is abysmal. You can still stay in business if you're putting plenty of leads in your pipeline.
Yep, for sure. Is there any other like big things that you think people get wrong? Like when they're still working that day job and they're wanting to do something on the side and they're trying to start out. Is there any other like big misses that you see people have a lot?
Yes. Do you know how you know you're in business?
You make money.
Period. And so, you know, again, working with freelancers, they're like, okay, so I'm going to start working on my website this weekend. And I'm like, I think that's cool. I'd love for you to get a website. I would much prefer, however, that you go get your first client.
Yeah. Oh, man. I tell people I spent so much time on my damn on a website in the beginning.
100 hours.
What the hell?
You're tinkering with the paragraph on your about page. And meanwhile, the opportunity is like, go start conversations, right? If you need to send people somewhere, I don't know, send them to your LinkedIn profile. If you've got a full-time job, I don't know, create a second LinkedIn profile for your freelancing and use that as your surrogate website. But I think the biggest mistake that a lot of freelancers make is focusing on the things that don't truly give them leverage right now.
Yeah. I wasted like a year on shit like this.
Absolutely. And I did too. Right. And so a little bit of time passes and then you're kind of like, you know, it's funny. All of my leads, all of my project leads are coming through my existing personal network and I haven't got a single contact form submission through my website. I've never gotten a single, that has changed. I've gotten clients through my website now, but in the early days, this website that I labored over got me exactly goose egg in project leads. And so how do we make this positive? How do we turn this into actionable advice? Focus on the things that really work. Major in the majors. If you want to make more money in a side hustle and your side hustle is freelancing, go start conversations. Go get projects.
A good example to drive home the point of don't waste your time building a website. So there's these guys that we're working with. They're doing some consulting with us to help us craft a new offer, like a scalable offer with paid ads, because we haven't scaled an offer like that. And these guys are making, man, I don't know how much they're making now. I know at one time they were making somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 a month, and they don't even have a website. Like, to me, that I just use that example. I'm like, this just shows that, like, if you're spending, like I was, like hours every night building this damn website, watching YouTube tutorials, like you're spending your time on the wrong things. Like, but
this puts it into perspective. There are a lot of people who are able to sell a lot of stuff in 1992. Like, think about the time before websites. Websites weren't even a thing. How did you sell? Relationships, right? And a lot of your early freelance projects are going to come through relationships anyway. And so when people say, well, send me to your website, you're like, oh, you just say, oh, it's not live yet. I'm working on it. But it's okay to actually say that for several years, right? And then, hey, tell you what, get some cash in the bank and pay a pro to build it for you. Unless you are a web developer and that is your skill, you're a web designer and that is your skill. Don't get sucked into the, oh, but Squarespace makes it super easy to set up my site. I agree. It's still going to take 30 hours that you could have spent on prospecting. So focus on the levers that will actually produce the results you want in your business. And as much as those of us who came into freelancing through like a liberal arts or even a fine arts background, last thing you want to hear is that what you need to do to really to build a profitable, satisfying freelance business, well, what you need to do is spend more time on marketing, period. What you need to do is just go out and start more conversations and then you'll make money. And then you'll be like, wow, maybe this is legit.
Yeah. We had a client that's in the music production business. Like he makes beats for like hip hop and rap artists and things like that. And like his whole story is like when he was just focusing on like the music and the craft of the music, he was broke and living with his parents. And when he started focusing on like the marketing and the business side, he made $1 million.
So every once in a while, when Megan, my wife and I are out, back when we used to go out, back in like the 2000s, right? Pre-COVID. But anyway, every once in a while, you see a really average looking dude with a beautiful woman. And you're always like, what's going on there? They are an odd couple. And I look at that guy and I'm like, he is playing the 80-20 rule. Like, he is focusing on the handful of things that produce a disproportionately good outcome. Usually he's listening, right? And so in this case, the 80-20 rule is in effect in that audio production guy's business, right? You can fail miserably at a lot of other things in your business. But if you're producing plenty of leads, you actually buy yourself time to fix the other business problems.
Yeah.
If you're failing miserably at getting new project leads, well, you may not have the opportunity to fix other things. And so I still catch myself wanting to tinker with the problem that I may just be more interested in when there's a bigger problem over here that poses a true existential threat to my business, right? So focus on solving the problem that, if you were to solve it, like unraveling the knot of pipeline and marketing, if you were to commit to becoming good at that as a freelancer, then all sorts of opportunities open up over here because you're like, crap, I've got too many leads. I don't know a single person who's like, no, please give me a problem other than too many leads. Right. And I don't mean to like bring in hyperbole and exaggerate. I just mean, as a freelancer, spend most of your time focused on solving the most important problems. The most important problem is usually, let me go get more project leads.
Yep. It should be.
It should be.
Yep.
It's easy to get distracted.
But. Yeah. So we've talked about a bunch of really actionable things and also some, you know, theoretical thought provoking things on how people need to, freelancers in a lot of this case on how people need to be thinking about how they approach their craft and their business. Now, I know you help people more with this and you started a cool project. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, you do it for 12 years and you start to get the hang of it. And that's what happened to me. And like I said, I was kind of looking around and realizing a lot of the people I see consistently making six figures and enjoying the lifestyle are bringing a certain type of scaffolding into their businesses. And so I finally bit the bullet and sat down and created a course called Freelance Cake. And the course has that framework I mentioned earlier with the six P's: positioning, packaging, pricing, pipeline, psychology, and process, right? So it has a step-by-step process for each of those. And it's not the only process. It's just a process that I have seen work again and again with my coaching clients. As much as I love coaching, I can't coach as many people as I would love to help. And also, even if a lot of this stuff you can also find available online, I realized, yeah, you can go watch 100 YouTube videos. You can go read 50 blog posts. But the fact is, people show up at their level of investment. And so I think a lot of us actually need to buy a premium resource in order to see true transformation. And I'm friends with folks who've made other courses. There are other excellent courses out there, but I wanted to put out a freelance growth course that I was really proud of so that I had something to offer people who couldn't afford me as a coach. And also, I had so many people invest in me and give me great advice. And I want to be able to do that for other people. Like, I want to be able to take what's in my head and in my heart, stories like that golden suitcase. That's what the way I talk about Andrew Gordon and that pricing is branding lesson. He has made me hundreds of thousands of dollars. That one piece of advice about how premium prices send the right signal. I have so many little insights, guiding principles that have helped me achieve the success that I've had. And I needed a way to pass those on. And so I'm just very passionate about helping other freelancers build profitable businesses that are also satisfying and sustainable. It's easy to burn out. I don't know if you have experienced this, but when the money stuff finally starts to click, it's easy to start saying yes to everything. If you've come from a place of scarcity, it's easy to let that scarcity mindset develop and then to say yes to everything, and you can burn yourself out. So what does sustainability look like too? So anyway, Freelance Cake, growth course for freelancers, you know, captures all of my best stuff from the last 10, 11 years, and then organizes it all into like this practical, no nonsense, take it a step at a time, do it at your own pace. A lot of the students end up becoming coaching clients. I think they're like, yeah, we still want the accountability, the personalized advice, the guidance, but I'm really happy to finally have this thing that I can say, hey, you're just getting started. Let me help you avoid the pitfalls. Let me help you get out of your head. You know, let me help you move past some insecurity. Let me help you wrangle imposter syndrome. So it's just been a joy to share it with people. And I mean, you want to make my day? Buy the course and tell me what happens afterwards. Like those emails, and you've probably experienced this, you know, people listen to an episode of the podcast. Maybe even a client is like, I can't believe we had Ryan, we had our best month ever. Thank you. Like, I'm a words of affirmation guy. I love getting those emails. And so when a student writes me and is like, I had one student, she tripled her monthly income. I had another student, he made 20K extra that year.
Life-changing stuff.
Life-changing stuff, right? And so it's just a lot of fun to be able to participate in other people's transformation and in a way to be able to pay it forward, because I've gotten a lot of help too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Where can people find out more about that?
FreelanceCake.com. Also AustinLChurch.com. Speaking of websites, I'm finally getting around to redesigning mine, but I'm paying other people, right?
Yeah.
But I've also at AustinLChurch.com got a free course that I think is killer. So even for folks who are not quite ready to invest, it's called Freelance Business Blueprint. And it is all about, please don't waste your time on things over here. Focus on the things that will really move the needle.
Yep. Yeah. That if people take that advice, they'll be in a much, much better place than I was wasting that whole first year. So Austin, it has been awesome to chat with you, man. I appreciate you coming on here, sharing all this value on helping people start a freelance possibly career or side hustle and make extra money that could totally change their life. So thank you for dropping those bombs, man. And it's been great to have you on the Hustle for Freedom podcast.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And before I forget, I will set up a page, AustinLChurch.com/hustle.
Sure.
Is that good? And I'll put the course up there.
Cool. Perfect. Sounds good. AustinLChurch.com/hustle. I will also link that down in the show notes below.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It was a joy.
Peace. And that's a wrap. I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third,
Take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.